Hello, welcome to the 10th episode of the At U2 podcast, where we talk all things U2, including album news, tour dates, commentary, and community discussion from the staff of At U2 and guests of At U2. We are streaming live on goodstuff.fm/live. Thanks for joining us in the chat room. And joining me on the show this time is Mr. Matt McGee, a friend of the show, I was going to say. You're somewhat familiar with atu2.com, aren't you?
I have heard of it, and I have visited it a couple times. They do some pretty nice work.
Yeah. The guy behind it, I think, is just loaded, getting rich like by the minute as we record this. But anyways, we'll moving on. Next on the...
Per listener, right?
Yeah, something like that. Next on the show is Mr. Tim Cunningham. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you, Chris.
Your first time on the show, and we'll touch base in a second here with you. But before that, we want to welcome Sherry back to the show. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, I can't believe we've reached double digits with the podcast. This is so exciting.
I know. I thought by now we'd be fired by Matt, told to go take the AtU2 brand off this thing and go underground or something. But so far.
Oh, let's get to the overground, baby.
Yeah, go. Get your head out of the mud.
So, Tim, by way of introduction to the listeners, when did you jump into the AtU2 fan world, and how many shows have you seen, and how many shows have you seen of this tour, or whatever you feel like telling us about your U2 relations?
All right. Well, I'm in Aries. I enjoy long walks on the beach. That good stuff. my U2 fandom started back around 94, 95. Oddly enough, I bought Zaropa the same day I bought my first internet modem, and was up all night playing on the internet, listening to Zaropa on repeat. In that time, I've seen 56 shows, 56 and a half shows, as a matter of fact, if you count a party I went to in New York City a couple months ago. Saw 18 shows on Innocence and Experience on the American leg. So been around for a while. I started following At U2 right at the end of Pop Mart, when they're down in Africa and South America, so 98, somewhere around there.
Wow. That's a long time.
It is. You're old, man.
There's no argument here on that count. I am reminded of that every day.
Awesome.
Yes, my wife. I walk around the house complaining about how old I am.
When you're
still younger than the band, Matt. Just remember that.
Yeah.
That's true.
That does make you feel old sometimes when you think about how old they are. Not that they can't keep going, and it's all good, but yeah. All right, well, let's jump right into the inbox, because I know we always end up with wanting to keep talking longer than we can. And so we have a few of the questions that people have submitted through the hashtag AskAtU2, of course, and keep those things coming. We have always room for more, and we'll, like I said in the last episode, we'll do a specific AskAtU2 episode, I think, in the future here, once the band slows down. All right, first one up. At Leo Loves U2 asks, do you think that songs like Zaropa, Ultraviolet, In a Little While, or Magnificent could enter in the set list like in the 360 tour? Which, now, sometimes I like to pull out questions that make us look like we were smart or something. Anyways, we know now that obviously Zaropa and Magnificent have entered the set list. What do you guys think? Are we going to see Ultraviolet in a little while?
No, I don't think so. Not on this tour. Maybe next year. Who knows? When things change. And but no, I don't think I don't especially in a little while. I just don't think that I don't know. I just don't think that one kind of fits.
That's where
I don't see it fitting, but you know, they brought it up randomly. You know, they did it on Vertigo with Brandon Flowers of the Killers. They did it on 360 in 2009 in the later half of the North American tour. They have a connection with that song, especially at the Joey Ramone connection. I'm surprised they didn't bust it out, at least even in snippet form on this show or on this leg.
And by the way, just to follow up on what I said a minute ago, when I said no, if we had done this question a week ago, I would have said, no, I don't think Magnificent's going to get played. So my opinion on this question is just completely immaterial. I have no idea what they're going to do.
This is where we can rely on the listeners to please call Matt on this in the future episodes when they do break out in a little while and becomes a mainstay in the set list of some sort. And they play like five different versions of it in a row or something.
That's right.
How about you, Sherry? What do you think?
I have learned to never say never. The more that you think that they're not going to do something, they'll pull it out and say, ha ha, I did. So, but they could pull out anything and I'll be happy. That probably did not come out right, but
it's a jive moment.
All right, next one is from Fabio. Fabia Nomad asks, when is Matt going to release a new book? Matt, I think you have to answer this one. Maybe we should, the rest of us could speculate and then.
Yeah, that's
never, you guys, say never.
You guys guess on this question and then I'll correct you. When am I going to, a new book, like an update for the diary book?
Or I guess, like, or just anything, you know, like Matt stories, Matt's life. I don't know.
I had this idea to do a children's book based on Cedarwood, and then somebody went and did it. So, like, wow.
There you go. Kind of
no, to give Fabiano a serious question. If the question is related to you two, a diary, that is entirely in the publisher's hands, and it's not up to me. If it were up to me, it would be updated every few years, but it's up to the publisher, and I am on a regular basis working on and doing things on the assumption will want it, but I would guess it to be, if ever, it will be several years away.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Next question from @Febatini asks, if you two will adapt the stage for Ireland shows, why don't they play in South America with the same arena design? And they also, she or he made the smart move of tagging Guy O'Siri on that, just in case. Thank you for including him in our show, because maybe we'll get him on someday if he sees enough tweets directed at the podcast. But yeah, what do you think now that they figured out how to get into the Dublin, what is it, the O2 arena or 03, 04? The arena?
It's just three arena.
Arena, right. Okay, I'm thinking London. Do you think they figure out maybe cracked other kind of stadiums like that are smaller or different, kind of adapting the concert to a different kind of venues?
Personally, I think because they have put a lot of money into creating this new design for a three arena, they would be stupid not to use it in other facilities where the standard stage would not fit. So I think we will see it. The question is when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They, they obviously wanted to get Ireland in this year. And I have no official word, obviously, but I would not be surprised if this tour hits Australia or South America, even Africa next year, where they need to fit it in a non-traditional hockey/basketball arena.
Yeah. And I'll just mention, I just noticed in the chat room, Fabio Nomad just joined. So, you just missed your question getting asked, but just so folks are aware, we do stream this live and there's a chat room where folks can give us feedback, correct us when we're wrong, help us with answers to questions that we can't figure out. And we stream it and record it live, typically Wednesday nights at, Sherry, it's 10:30 p.m. Eastern, right? Is that
correct? 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Saskatoon, and 7:30 Pacific time, 3:30 in the morning Dublin time.
There we go. That's what we should always just do, is say it's whatever time zone or time it is in Ireland and Dublin, and that'll be our central. Anyways, I have a weakness, an issue with time zones, as people know if they follow me on Twitter. Nothing new there. All right, Pickles_71, best username so far, I think, of the series, asks, what do you think Bono's thought process is for singing "We'll Shine Like Stars" at the end of "With or Without You"? As you can see, it's close to my heart. I'm always curious about this because it's like a fan favorite, little like hidden gem or whatever on the song. And I'm curious why and when they decide to break it out. It seems like it's been fairly often on this tour. It used to be kind of like hidden away for a while. And I'd love to know how much deliberation it is, or if it's just a spur of the moment thing that they could certainly do that technically on stage as musicians, but if they actually plan it ahead of time or just kind of go with the moment and follow Bono's lead on that. What do you guys think?
The band doesn't have to change anything. It's Bono. The band's going to play that whether he starts doing his "Oh, Oh, Oh" is at the end or he does the "Shine Like Stars." What happened in Toronto, the second night in Toronto on this tour, which was the first time on Innocence and Experience that it was played, was there was a woman who printed up, 100 signs or so that just said "Shine Like Stars," and she handed them out to people. And when Bono was singing "With or Without You" out at the E stage, everyone was holding him up pretty much in his face. And he started walking back. And I remember seeing the signs and thinking, oh, that'd be cool if I heard that again. And he started walking back and he kind of arched his shoulders back like he was going to launch into the big crescendo at the end of that song, and he launched right into Shine Like Stars. So that's kind of how that happened. That was definitely a fan motivated thing. Since then, I don't know, maybe it's just in his head. He forgot that he ever sang that. Who knows whatever's running through that guy's head.
How about you, Matt? What do you think?
Yeah,
Sherry, go ahead.
Okay. I have a theory about Shine Like Stars. I think part of it has to deal with the vibe of the audience. For Turin 1, he wanted to launch into it, but the audience was already singing the O-O-O-O's that he just cut out of it. For Turin 2, he launched right into it. He really got into it. For this tour, if you're watching the visuals as they're being presented, especially during With or Without You, you have all of this light that's pouring through that's almost star-like. There is a star theme in the concert with the way that the stars appear during Iris in the constellations, and just throughout the show, the stars pop every now and again. I'm very surprised that Shine Like Stars hasn't come out a lot more often, which just proves to me that it really is held back for either a very special occasion or Bono's in a good mood or something along those lines. But that refrain would really fit in beautifully with this current production if it were to be performed more often.
Do you guys think that he, so Tim mentioned the signs that were held up, and as I recall too, there were at least a couple occasions where it was mentioned to him when he's out, you know, talking to fans before in the afternoon outside the venue before the show, right? Like when the whole band enters and they stop and they chat and sign autographs and all that sort of stuff. I think I recall a few occasions where somebody said, oh, you know, we talked to Bono and we said, you know, we really love to hear Shine Like Stars. I'm of the opinion that he has not even been aware of what that one little verse, you know, how much, you know, weight and value, you know, fans put on that verse. I don't think that he's actually understood that until perhaps the signs and the fans, you know, encouraging him to sing it and all that sort of stuff. Is there anything that, am I wrong?
No, I agree. Agree with that, because for millions of people, the live version of With or Without You is the version from Rattle and Hum, which obviously has that coda at the end of it. You know, more people know Rattle and Hum than they know Zoo TV, or they know, you know, Pop Mart or any of the other DVDs or videos they ever put out. So, you know, the majority of people, I mean, a lot of YouTube fans could pretty much quote that movie verbatim. So for them, that is the live, the definitive live version of With or Without You. So to us, it seems like a requisite part of the song, but to him, he might even have forgotten he sang it until someone reminded him of it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. I think it's just something that he's not really appreciated how much fans would love to hear. So,
but I think that also rings true to the way that the fan interaction piece with this particular tour has really helped the band transform the performance. Because you had the fan interaction about that at several points during the first leg, I believe that encouraged the coda to come back. Had that not happened, I don't think that we would have seen this. And the band themselves are becoming more receptive to listening to what their audience is looking for. I mean, they did Lucifer's Hands one night. They've done Crystal Ballroom a little bit, but that, I believe, was because of the fan interaction saying, hey, we want to hear this. Mm-hmm. So I think that if more fans asked for it, it might get a little annoying, but every so often it's like a nice sorbet that cleans the palate.
Nice.
All right. You guys go ahead and talk. I'm going to suggest that as a title.
I was going to ask in the chat room, U2GW asks, regardless of whether Shine Like Stars is played on a given night, does it seem like With or Without You has gotten some new life on this tour? What do you guys think on that one?
Yes.
Definitive.
Agree.
Good.
I mean, they stopped playing it at certain times on the Elevation tour. You know, and I can't imagine the people who, the only time they ever saw U2 was one of those shows on Elevation where they weren't playing it. I think it's definitely taken on a new life. This tour, and I'm glad the energy is back and that it actually means something other than just going through the motions like I kind of saw on Vertigo and even to some extent 360.
Yeah, it's, to me, it's one of those songs that is tough. There's songs, and everybody has their own opinion, I'm sure, of songs they're tired of hearing on the tours live, and not that they would kick them out of bed for eating crackers playing them or whatever, but for me, it's always been Pride. Is like, emotionally, it's an awesome song and it's connected well, but it kind of feels like, okay, this is the, they don't seem to give it new life each tour often, enough for me anyways. And whereas I would guess With or Without You could be one of those songs for other people where it's kind of played more or less the same. It's pretty straight. They do it, you know, straight from the album kind of ish and don't give it too much change from each tour to tour. But it seems like it's, yeah, on this tour anyways, it's felt a little bit more energetic. Like the band is more excited to play it than they have been in the, maybe in the past. And what was it, Sherry, or somebody said from one of the Adam interviews that he, you know, doesn't play the same any night after whatever, each night is different, how he plays it and stuff like that. So, yeah.
But it's also one of those songs that it needs to be positioned perfectly within the set list. I mean, mm-hmm. when I saw them in San Diego back on March 30th, 2005 on the Vertigo tour, With or Without You was the sixth song in that set. That was way too early for With or Without You to make an appearance within the set. It belongs where it is right now. It's one of those songs, especially in the U.S. market, where I believe it was their first number one song in this country, it deserves to be towards the encore. I like where it's currently placed in the Innocence and Experience set list right now.
Can I just defend With or Without You, the 360 version of this for a second? Because this, I mean, this was, you know, somebody said in our chat, 360 version was definitely going through the motions. And that's been, like, I've heard that a million times. It's, you know, people talk about that in our forum and blah, blah, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I just, I watched the Pasadena DVD, you know, really, really up close and listened to the audio and all this sort of stuff. And I had this argument in our forum before. And I didn't win, and I'm probably not going to win now. But my take on the 360 version of With or Without You is that, granted, it sounds like he's singing it in a very disinterested way, and it does sound like he's kind of going, you know, because it doesn't have the sort of energy and you don't hear that passion. But my take on it is that in the production, the play of, you know, that is a U2 show, he at that point is singing as a character who is at the end of his rope. You see him during the song, he's hanging on to that circular microphone as if it's the last thing that he's got to hold on to in his life. And With or Without You goes into the next song, which was Moment of Surrender. So I think he sang that song on 360 as if he is just reaching the moment of surrender. And so I don't think that it's actually going through the motions. I think it's him playing a part as the character singing, you know, these songs in the show. So anyway, that's just my take on it. I understand why people think that the 360 version of With or Without You sounds like they're going through the motions, but I think there's actually a reason it sounded that way. So,
and anyway, that's how I took it, Matt.
Okay, well, thank you. Yay, I'm not alone.
That's a real Zoo TV moment.
All right. Moving on to the last question from our inbox that we'll do this week anyways. Fabio Nomad, one more from him or her. For this next trip to Dublin, tell us about the U2 landmarks that need to be visited before the concerts. I don't know if you guys have some quick feedback. We didn't have too much time to prep beforehand. I thought we could probably break this out into a larger segment that we do a bit of prep for on a future episode, and probably would be worth, if it isn't already, somewhere on at U2.com, a written up version. But in the meantime,
we still have Matt's Dublin guide somewhere.
Well, it's at U2's Dublin guide. Yes, it actually is in dire need of an update. In case anybody wants to take that project on, hint, hint.
at u2.com/Dublin is where you can go to start with anyways. But
yeah, but there's some things, there's some things that it's missing. And yeah, I agree. We should, like, when those shows get closer, we should like dedicate a show or two specifically to for that. So, 'cause I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fans making the trip. So, but if I just to pick one off the top of my head, there's a new, there's what's it called? The Little Museum or the, or Sherry or Tim or what's it? There's a museum that has like a whole U2 related display right now. And so, you know, that to me, you know, if I can make it over there, that would be pretty high on my list of things to see.
Yes. It's the Little Museum of Dublin, littlemuseum.ie.
Mount Temple for Joyce in the chat room said they printed out Matt's Dublin guide long ago for a trip, I want to say in the late 90s. So that's back when yeah, you couldn't just take your smartphone and be like, Matt, this is out of date. What's going on? But yeah, we will anybody else that's been to Dublin? Have you guys been to? I was there, but I didn't go on a bunch of YouTube pilgrimage stuff because I was kind of like felt odd trying to, you know, find their house or whatever and stuff, but definitely a beautiful city to tour around in. So, but yeah, any other U2 related landmarks that are worth catching before?
One that I would recommend, although you need to be of right mind and spirit to go there, is Kilmainham Jail. That was featured in the video for A Celebration as well as in the movie In the Name of the Father. It was featured in the music video for In the Name of the Father as well. That was the song that both Bono and Gavin Friday wrote and performed for the movie. That is filled with so much history, obviously, that going through there will prepare you for where some of the songs that Bono's written, where those initial thoughts came from. It's very moving. It's I was really shaken coming out of there, which is ironic because you got shake in A Celebration, but I digress from that. It is a place where you are just thrown back into history and the reason why people were imprisoned there. So that would be one location where I would recommend. And then go out and get a good pint after that.
Right. Yeah, Num Lemon in the chat room just threw in a video that we'll link that we'll throw in the show notes to a video of the Little Museum exhibit and mentioned that there is a U2 exhibit there right now, actually. So something to keep in mind. And the show notes and where you can find those when we talk about links and things that you can go catch are at goodstuff.fm/at U2/11 is where that'll be. Sorry, just the video started playing there on me before I could hit pause to go get the link. But that's where you can
find
it.
And I also believe with the Little Museum U2 exhibit there, didn't Scott Calhoun write up some of the information for that? So that's a at U2 connection there.
All right, for the next segment of the show, we're going to do a little Stump Matt segment.
Oh gosh. We need theme music for this.
I know. That's okay. I need Siri to remind me tomorrow when I'm not thinking about the podcast to get for now.
How do rock stars smell like?
There we go.
Is that a trivia question?
That's your first question from Bono. Listener, I don't know if that's how you say his name, Bono or Bono. But yeah, I'll just play it again so you can.
How do rock stars smell like?
Have you ever met a rock star, Matt?
No, I haven't asked. How do they smell? I have no idea. You've stumped me.
Ding, we needed a bell. I don't know. Okay, well, I don't know the answer to this one. Mysterious Days, at Mysterious Days on Twitter, sent this one in. Which actress has claimed Bono as her hero, idol, and has talked about meeting him when she was a teen in AZ? Is that New Zealand? No, AZ, Arizona. AZ is, somebody help me out here.
AZ is Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona, yeah, is a state. But okay. Anyway, Arizona or somewhere else. Anybody know? I'm stumped.
I have a guess, but I don't know if it's correct or not. Why?
I have no idea.
Because I'm thinking the only famous actress I know from Arizona is Emma Stone.
Ah, which could be. So there you go. Mysterious Days, you need to reply later and let us know if Matt was right. Or someone in the chat room can fill us in while we're doing this. Okay, Sherry, do you have your list? Did I stall long?
I do.
Okay.
So What was the first major artist's tour Willie Williams did?
Oh, never mind.
The first U2 tour or the first any artist?
Any artist. The first major artist.
Oh, gosh. I was just looking at his website like a week ago. I should know that. No, I could not name it. It was... Oh, it was...
And by the way, all questions are taken from articles on atu2.com.
You know, look...
It's a jive moment.
There's 8 or 9,000 articles. You don't seriously think I've read every one of them, do you? the first tour, I know this. I remember him talking about it. I've seen it on, it's like, no, go ahead. Go ahead. You got me.
Oops.
Duran Duran.
I knew that. Oh, I knew that one.
Okay. Next one.
Okay. U2 won the Limerick Civic Week Pop 78 competition. Who came in second?
Oh, that is a great question. You're not going to let me like go read that article on the website, are you?
If you guys, can find it.
You go, oh, can I find it? Of course I can find it. It's easy to find.
AtU2 has a great search. This is the sponsored by AtU2.com segment of the show.
So is this the phone a friend? I'm going to phone my little bot.
Did you find that?
I'm actually looking it up right now.
Get it all out the edge.
Chatham, you can. You
Rockster.
Can
very good.
A band called Rockster.
Right.
Pint.
Hey, next question, Sherry.
Why was Dogtown important to you two?
That's where they recorded part of the Joshua Tree.
Pint.
No. Oops, I hit the wrong one.
Oops.
Right, Sherry? Do you have the right... I'm looking at the answer
you
gave
according,
me.
Well, according to the Robbie Adams interview, it was Octung Baby.
I thought they recorded... Well, that could be. I thought they recorded part of the Joshua Tree there, though.
All right, well, something...
Or maybe they did both. I don't know.
That could be.
But that was from the Robbie Adams interview.
Just really quick, I did just Google U2 Dogtown, and the second result comes from a book called U2 A Diary. So, you might want to read that, Matt.
You, really?
Oops.
Let me look at that. It does.
That's awesome.
Now, if only they had indexed stuff in the back so you could look up Dogtown. Oh, page 78 or whatever
that
it was.
That'd be fantastic. I wish they had done an index for the book, but no such luck.
It kills me when I'm doing research and I can't scan through an index and I have to spend 5 hours reading the damn thing.
Awesome. Well, was that the last one, Sherry? Is that I lost my window here. Do you have?
Yeah. Yeah. Comedy of threes. So there you go.
There was a couple more that folks had sent in. I know. And we will just like the ask at you two hashtag topics and questions and stuff. We will keep them going and archive them, and we'll keep the segment going as long as questions get submitted or as long as Sherry has things to ask.
So we should do another listener question, though.
We should?
Yes, we should.
I found U2GW's question, which this is a good one, actually. I'm curious about. And then, Sherry, I don't know what you're talking about, but we can do yours, too. He asks, or she, how many different names have the four members gone by as a band? Can be more than four in the band, but not less.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I know where this is going to lead. So the Hype, Feedback, U2, and Passengers are the four, because I think the whole thing that they were called the Larry Mullen Band for 5 minutes, I think that's a story that was just made up. So I don't use that as an official band name. So
okay, wait. So which four you said? The Hype, Feedback, Passengers,
and U2.
And U2.
How about the Dalton Brothers?
Yeah, that's one.
Oh yeah, you could call, okay, if you want to call that. Sure.
So added, yeah.
Because
so,
I mean, Passengers was clearly with Brian Eno and stuff, so I don't know if you can, they clearly put in four in the band.
Right, as opposed to doing
in the band. So yeah, Passengers counts.
Now would Automatic Baby also
No, he just he just he just that? Said he just said in the chat that it does not count because it was just Adam and Larry.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's just the rhythm section. What do they know?
Or the recent stuff with like Bruce Springsteen or whatever and Chris
Martin. Or the Unforgettable Fire or stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
At some party. Okay. Sherry, did you have another one?
Basically, the first week we did this segment, I got everything right. This week, I got everything wrong. And just for the record, this week is more emblematic of how things are going to go in the future.
Oops.
That's okay. It's called Stump Matt. So, I mean, it wouldn't live up to the segment title if it didn't actually stump you. So,
well, and it's going to be easy to do. Trust me.
All right. Some of the questions that folks asked sort of led us into what we wanted to talk about on the At U2 roundtable here for our third segment of the show. And that being the recent announcement. Well, it was announced before the last episode. And then since then, people have had the chance to hopefully buy tickets for the Dublin concerts, Belfast concerts in Ireland. And I guess, first of all, around the roundtable here, I'm going to just declare that I am not attending, not flying over to Ireland, but going from, let's start with Tim. Are you flying over and partaking?
I will be partaking, yes.
Imbibing. Matt, how about you?
I think so. I have most of what I need. I just don't have affordable airfare. So as long as that comes through, then yes, I will be there.
You can hitchhike, right? If I'm not up on my geography, but I think you can probably get there. Sherry, how about you?
Booked, flight sorted, hotel sorted, ticket sorted, dream came true. I'm so excited.
All right. So one of the questions Fabio Nomad asks was, how hard was it for the AtU2 staff to get Dublin tickets? I think just as hard or as easy as anybody else. But Matt or Sherry or Tim, anybody chime in, I guess, on what the ordering process was like for you?
We all had different, I think we all had different experiences. Tim, what I recall seeing on Twitter, had sort of a nightmare, as I recall. And for me, so I'll let Tim chat. I mean, the answer to mine is, for me, it's simple. It was incredibly easy, and I feel incredibly lucky that it was so easy. I signed in at 2 minutes to the top of the hour, and it put me in the queue, and then all of a sudden the page came up, and I typed in that I wanted 2 GAs, and it made me wait for like 3 minutes, and 2 GAs came right up, or 1 GA, or whatever it was for the sale. Yeah, it was for me. So I'm incredibly fortunate. It was super easy for me to get my tickets. But like I said, I know that many others had a lot more problems.
Damian, how about you?
What happened to me was I set the alarm to wake up at 3 in the morning or 2:55 in the morning and started hitting refresh. And I saw a lot of people had to wait. It literally gave me 2 GAs within 15 seconds of hitting submit. And on another computer, I had 2 very good seats pulled up within like a minute of hitting submit. But for some reason, it kept rejecting my transactions, even to the point where about 10 minutes after the first set of GAs got rejected, I was able to pull up another set of GAs for the final night, and that transaction got shut down as well. So even though I had 6 tickets in my queue, every time I went to the final step of finalizing the transaction, it said, oops, sorry, go back and try it again. That's where I'm at.
How about you, Sherry?
Well, I was trying from my home computer. My husband was trying from a work computer. And we got through pretty quick. I think what was helpful was we were all accessing it from a different IP address than our counterparts over in Europe and especially England. I know that some of our staff members were having issues from England trying to get tickets. But my loving husband accidentally got tickets for a show that we weren't planning on going to, which kind of messed up our childcare issues. But you know what? Those are all workarounds because we had tickets. So we weren't going to worry about that. So we have some very loving in-laws who are taking care of the kiddos for us. But, from my experience here, it was almost too easy. And I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And once you know it, less than a day later, the other shoe dropped when I found out from my credit card company that my card once again was potentially hacked by a third party. And now I've got to go back through like what happened to me in Vancouver, and I have to go through the whole credit card transaction thing because now the card isn't working. As long as I hold on to it, the magnetic stripe should still work, but I don't trust that. So now I'm flying over. I believe I have a ticket. I have everything that says I have a ticket, but because it's GA and it's credit card swipe in order to get in, I'm going to have to bring all my paperwork with me in case my credit card doesn't work again.
Now, Sherry, I had the same thing happen. I was actually in Phoenix for the shows back in May or whenever they were. And I got the alert that my credit card had been hacked, and I had four other shows left on that credit card. I never did anything other than bring the expired or now canceled credit card and got in every single time.
Very good. I
never had a problem.
Yeah, I'm always concerned when it's an international show. So, mm-hmm. You know, when it happened to me up in Canada, I'm flying all the way up to Vancouver and I'm going to have a credit card thing. Now I'm flying all the way over to Dublin and I'm going to have a credit card thing, you know.
Should just stay in Boston.
cash. Are you paying for cash? I know. Not really possible. But
cash isn't going to get you in if you have GA. Right. It's a paperless ticket, which I'm still in shock that the band didn't do paperless for all Ireland shows, especially after seeing what's been going on with the ticket resales for those shows. It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the one article I saw, like, it's just crazy how expensive tickets are already being listed for, and obviously, you know, scalpers found their way in, as you can happen. Is scalping illegal or legal in Ireland? Does anybody know?
No, I have no idea.
It must be legal because there's sites in Ireland that do it. So I'm assuming it's legal. Yeah.
There were a ton of tickets that were already up or claiming to be legit tickets that were already up last Thursday when the Ireland only pre-sales happened. So, you know, one of the tricks that scalpers will typically do is they will post tickets that they don't have yet, or they will post them for a row that they don't have, and hopefully they get the same section but a different row, so then they can say, oh, we're going to upgrade you, we got better seats a few rows down, when in reality they didn't have the tickets that they had posted in the first place. That's why people need to be really careful about purchasing any tickets from a non-legit agency.
Mm-hmm. Like, what happens if I didn't get you two tickets for Ireland? What do I do now? Do I just go camp out outside the arena? Do I wait outside Bono's house hoping he'll let me in? What do I do?
Well, so, like, this is one of the things that frustrates me as a fan and ticket buyer is, you know, that they have, you know, immediately within the first hour of the public ticket sales, they start sending out the press releases, you know, tickets sold out in 28 minutes or 35 minutes or whatever it was. And it's bullcrap because the tickets are not sold out. And so I want to make sure, like, we did this on Twitter the night of the ticket sales because, you know, people were tweeting back, oh, I can't get tickets, I'm giving up. And so we just say, no, don't give up. Keep trying. There's more tickets, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and, you know, then people would say, and you're right, you know, it's 40 minutes after the hour and I just got two GAs and you know, it's 53 minutes after the hour and I just got another ticket. And so we wrote an article. I wrote it. Look at that. I wrote an article in January. This would have been right after the first round of ticket sales for the North American tour, and it's called "I Didn't Get U2 Tickets. Now What?" And if you go and as Chris would say at this point, we will put the link in the show notes. But if you just go to Google and just type in "didn't get U2 tickets," it should come up as the first thing. And the thing that I talk about in there is that sold out doesn't mean that all the tickets are gone. Live Nation and other promoters, they announce shows are sold out because it's just part of the creating buzz and it's part of the marketing of the show and it's just how they do things. But tickets, you know, U2 has a history of always releasing more tickets as a show date gets closer, and they do that to thwart scalpers in part. They do it because, and especially with the Dublin show, where this is a new production and sight lines are going to have to be figured out once the equipment starts getting moved in and all this sort of stuff, there's going to be tickets released as the shows get closer. So people need to just keep checking on Ticketmaster IE. Don't give up. We also, in our forum, we have a section that's very, very active right now for ticket sales for all of the European shows, but especially the Dublin shows. So there's just, I mean, there's, it just, I get so sad when I see people, you know, saying, oh, I give up. I can't get U2 tickets. It's already sold out. It's like, no, it's not sold out. Don't stop trying.
And so there is still time, obviously, before the shows, and also time to book flights, et cetera, all that kind of stuff. I understand the pressure when it's like an international trip and stuff like that, that you're, and like Sherry, you know, you're trying to book babysitters or whatever for kids and stuff like that. But yeah, it's don't keep trying and let us know. Send a ask at U2 question or comment if you can't have one on Twitter, your success or not, I guess, post the initial launch of tickets. And we'd love to hear your stories of especially the successes. Hopefully there's more of those than the frustrations, but either way, and we'll commiserate with you and celebrate with you as you head off to Dublin.
Yeah, I'd love if people on Twitter, you know, if they just, you know, check Ticketmaster someday and they suddenly there's more tickets available, I'd love for them to tweet at us so that we know and so that we can share the word with our followers.
I promise you, Matt, if that happens, if I see tickets available on Ticketmaster, I will tell you the second after my transaction is completed. I promise you that.
There you go. Thank you, sir. And yeah. By the way,
priorities.
Buy them first, buy yours first, and then let everybody, I understand that. Val just said on Twitter that she got her Montreal tickets a week before the show. So it's, you know, even though they say sold out, it doesn't really mean sold out.
Yeah.
Right.
Always, and things that happen.
The question is, of course, about ticket drops. So are you going to do ticket drops for Ireland? I mean, I don't know if we want to go into that, but I don't see a lot of tickets being dropped for those shows. The VIP list is going to be a mile long. You look at what happened with the New York shows and how not a lot of tickets were dropped other than one or two, you know, seats in the nosebleeds or whatever it was. I don't think there's going to be a ticket drop for Ireland as we get closer to those dates.
For less savvy fans like myself and others, what does ticket drop mean?
The band or the venue reserves seats that they don't sell or tickets they don't sell. Whether that's because they got to have the fire marshal come in and say, okay, you can put 100 more people on the floor, or they think something's going to be an obstructed view, but it ends up not being an obstructed view, or even they just keep tickets around to kind of help screw the scalpers over for fans who actually are, you know, constantly hitting refresh on Ticketmaster. They'll release a bunch of tickets just randomly without any warning.
Right.
And I disagree with you. I fully believe that will happen for the Dublin shows.
Really? Well, I like your optimism.
Thank you.
I think they probably would too, just because of all the trouble they've had sort of getting the venue or the show in there. And even as they get closer, you know, they set the stage up and they realize, oh, actually we could fit, you know, 200 extra people in this section or whatever. Certainly could. I mean, it wouldn't be probably enough that those of us across the ocean could fly over the night before or something maybe. But yeah, you never know. But
I've definitely seen ticket drops within like an hour before the band take the stage. And what would happen is the person would be purchasing the tickets at the box office window. And then a member of the production staff would personally escort that person into the venue so that you couldn't turn around and resell the ticket. If you're buying that ticket, you're going into the show. That's how I actually envision the Dublin ticket drop happening, where it's going to be very much at the last minute and you're getting escorted directly into the venue.
Right. Yeah. Like Gavin Friday will come out and say, okay, we've got some.
it'll be production assistant number 7 or whatever, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. At @nobody_home2 asked, any plans for a fan get together in Dublin? I'm a longtime fan, but pretty new to the online community and traveling solo. It would be cool to put some faces to names and podcast voices and maybe tour some U2 sites. Yeah, I think that would be an awesome thing. Just as soon as I get my Kickstarter going so that we can do a podcast from Dublin, for those of us who aren't at the show. But that aside, Matt, and anybody else going, what are you, any thoughts or plans yet for a get together?
Matt, Sherry, do you want to take this?
You tell me. I mean, we're discussing it. We don't have any, you know, firm, you know, confirmation of anything right now, but we're trying to figure out, you know, what we can do, where we can do it, and all that sort of stuff. We're just now sorting out, you know, which from our staff are going to be there and aren't going to be there. So, I mean, it's a little bit early, but, you know, hopefully as things progress, we'll have something to share. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident we're going to have at least a few different things going on for the disconcerting fans who feel like, oh my goodness, I want to be with my people, but I don't know where to go. We are currently in talks for a variety of different things. And when we're ready to launch Watch the Space on the front page of At U2, and we will announce it.
I think also just to recommend or mention the At U2 forums, which you can find at forum.atu2.com. And I'm sure regardless of what Matt and Sherry have planned or don't have planned or whatever official stuff, there'll be other fans there, obviously. That goes without saying. But especially if you're traveling alone and stuff like that, like definitely get in the forums there. And there's a whole segment of fan or section on fan plans and meetups and stuff, and arrange something regardless of what ends up happening as an official at U2.com get together of some sort. I hear there's a few places to get together, hang out and have a pint in Ireland. So that shouldn't be a problem. And there'll be lots of U2 fans there too. So
they sell beer in Dublin?
Apparently.
Oh, okay.
speaking of Dublin, I'll just throw this little aside in. I went to Dublin before back in 99 by myself, traveled there for a month and a half. And one of my first nights was getting driven around Dublin by a hostel owner who was probably in his 60s or 70s, I don't know, probably was slightly drunk. And I was in the back of this van with big kegs rolling around, and he was driving me around. He dropped me off at a pub, and I walked in, and the whole place was screaming along to Pride. And it was kind of like, well, here you are in Dublin. here's a bar, and here's your people. So it was kind of a nice way to start my trip. Yeah. Anyways. Can ask me about that some other time. All that to say, Dublin's a fun place to go. The other thing we wanted to quickly touch on was just the recent episodes, this podcast episodes, the recent concert shows in Amsterdam. And what did you guys catch? I know, Sherry, you were live tweeting some of the shows and stuff, and it kind of seemed like maybe I was just paying more attention to that particular show, but they kind of stuck out as some really memorable shows. What did you guys think of that stop?
Amsterdam 4, I believe, was the show of the tour thus far. I was able to listen in on a Mixler stream while I was driving the kids around to all their various different activities. And I just had a visceral physical reaction throughout the whole show of just this emotion that was coming through my Bluetooth speaker within the car, only to have that be confirmed in watching some of the fan videos that got put up onto YouTube afterwards. Watching Lizeth's video as well as the one that U2 Gigs put up, especially of Mother and Child Reunion going into Bad and 40, you can just watch as the emotion is pouring out. And even Larry, who typically doesn't show a lot of emotion, he was either in a lot of pain or he was feeling something, because I haven't seen him drum with his eyes closed during Bad in a good long time. And so that whole show in general was just amazing. Today's show in Stockholm was pretty good. They've really hit their stride once again with this new production, with the new setup. And I think that they're only going to continue to get better. But that Amsterdam 4 just ranks right up there.
Yeah, how about you, Matt? Were you, or Tim, were you guys able to listen or post, I guess, stream and listen?
I mean, I'll jump in really quick. It's, you know, there's something going on over there in Amsterdam. I don't know what they're smoking, but I agree with Sherry that that fourth show was, I mean, it was powerful. Clearly, the emotional connection they're feeling with what's going on in the world, especially in Europe and the Middle East right now, is like definitely fueling their shows, and you're getting a passion out of them that we didn't necessarily see in the States or in Canada. But I agree that I've never heard Bad go into 40 like it did at Amsterdam 4, which I thought was great. I'm really liking Bad on this tour. I think some of the best versions I've ever seen are being done on this tour. So I was happy to see that that great segue from Bad into 40 the other day.
Yeah, I think I was like you, Sherry. I was doing some other stuff. I hadn't planned to tune in. I was kind of just, you know, like I like to if I can, but I was just, I think I was washing dishes or something and trying to get the kids down for a nap or something. And I had it going and I was like, man, this sounds like a really good show, and kind of in and out. But then afterwards, seeing the tweets and then reading, obviously, the comments and watching the videos, is kind of like, oh, yeah, that was actually a really good show. And I just have to mention, too, my former boss in another life, when I was used to help out with a different YouTube site, Caroline got name checked in Cedarwood Road, which is pretty cool. So shout out to her. Name checked on a podcast, too. It's been a big week.
Yeah, I was so excited for her. So excited for her.
That's great.
So, yeah, and just, yeah, a great show that when they, and like you said earlier, Breaking Out Magnificent. I put a link to the tours.idu2.com entry for that, I keep saying episode, I'm too stuck in podcasts, for that concert. So if you want to check out some of the details and which songs and links to videos and all that kind of stuff, and read or post your reviews of it too on there, of course, as well. So how about you, Matt? I forgot to ask you.
Yeah, no, I don't have much to add to what's been said. It's these shows are just there. I sometimes I can listen, like for today's show in Stockholm, I was able to listen, but I was just, you know, knee deep in my day job, and so it was background noise, and so I could not tell you one thing that actually happened. I remember enjoying it, but it's a tough time of day for me to really pay a lot of close attention to these shows. I did, like you know, Tim and Cherry said, I watched the videos as I could online afterwards, and it was that Bad 40 closing in Amsterdam, that was just fantastic. So
and they're still, so as we record this on Wednesday the 16th, they're in Stockholm basically for the duration of when we record this, and then when we record next, likely next Wednesday night, 23rd, will be the day before they go start up in Berlin in Germany. So still lots of time to, I know some folks asked on the Ask at U2 hashtag if we'll see any members of ABBA pop up since they're in Sweden, as happened to Zoo TV, I think, right? They had a couple of them on. And
Dancing Queen.
Bjorn Benny.
Yeah.
They did from Angel of Harlem in the Dancing Queen, yeah.
Yeah, so... we'll see, I guess, what happens, and then who knows. I think Berlin, Germany definitely seems to, I mean, the history that's there, obviously, and seems to inspire great things out of the band as well, and so they've got a bunch of stops there as well. So, exciting times ahead for this tour.
It'll be interesting to see the rotation that U2 Larry's shirt takes during the next few shows.
Oh, my gosh.
I definitely see myself acting more as a musician in the future.
There we go. All right. Any final comments, things we need to chat about, Matt, before we sign off for this episode?
No, I think we're all good. If you think we're all good.
I think so. I think we're all good. There's enough edit points in this episode that I think we're good. We should stop all our head.
We're going to be keeping you busy, huh?
The live listeners get to hear the unedited version, and you can too if you want to tune in. Like I said, goodstuff.fm/live. You can hear the audio. We don't stream video of it. It's not like Crowdcast or Periscope or Blab or any number of acronyms and things that are out there on the web. Just audio, but there's a chat room you can join in, suggest titles as we make our way through. And beyond that, be sure to follow the Twitter account of @U2, which is just @U2. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/@U2com. And where you can find this episode and previous episodes and how to subscribe in iTunes or RSS feed. If you are an Android user or something else that doesn't like iTunes, you can go to goodstuff.fm/@U2. And, oh, the hashtag #AskAtU2 is where you can send questions, comments, suggestions for the show, and we'll use them in future episodes. And what was the, it was Stump, hashtag #StumpM2, I think is what we're using for questions to stump Matt with. And if Matt isn't on the episode, we'll just stump whoever else fills his seat in his absence. Do you guys want to, we haven't done this before, but why don't you guys quickly shout out what your Twitter handle is so folks want to bug you or follow you after the show, where they can find you. Starting with you, Tim.
Well, mine is easy to remember because it's the abbreviation for Where the Streets Have No Name, WTSHNN.
How often do you have to explain that to non-YouTube fans?
Just once with you, I believe.
Oh. Nice.
Zing.
No, I get asked that all the time. They try and pronounce it, which is really funny. Like it's some weird Icelandic word or something like that. No vowels.
All right. And Sherry, how about you?
I am @U2Com Sherry.
All right. And Mr. Matt?
I am @iChris.
Ooh, that gives me license to tweet a few things. People think I'm Matt. All right.
Oh, I'm @MattMcGee.
Yeah. And I'm Chris. I will be the one responsible for the tweets that I send out. Thank you, folks, for listening. We haven't asked in a couple episodes, but if you are using iTunes and you want to go and leave a rating or review on the show, if you follow the link to the iTunes store to subscribe and stuff there, you can leave a rating or review. It helps us get the word out about the show to other Apple iTunes users, and maybe they'll feature us as they have in the past in the various sections on the store, and just brings more listeners to the show, which is always fun. And I think that's it for this episode. Until next time, have a great time.